Welcome back to the Greater Greener Georgia podcast. My name is Christian, and today I am here with Georgia State House Representative Gabriel Sanchez of the 42nd District.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Welcome, Gabe, or should I say welcome back? This is not your first time on the podcast.
Yep, glad to be back.
So yeah, welcome back. I'm excited to get into things today. Number one, let me just thank you for your time. I realize for viewers who don't know, we are in the midst of Georgia's 2025 legislative session.
Yeah.
So you had to take time out of your busy schedule to come here and join us, and I appreciate that.
No, of course. I always love to be here, so.
So, you know, we talked a little bit with you during our candidate Meet the Candidate series, and we got to learn about you, but I kind of want to do more of a deep dive and just really figure out, you know, I find it interesting to find out where people come from.
Yeah.
Because I think it really helps us understand the work that they do.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about your childhood, where you grew up, what your family was like.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm born and raised here in Georgia. I'm a son of Colombian immigrants who came here. My parents came in the 96 Olympics here in Atlanta. But before that, a lot of people on my mom's side of the family, the extended family, were here for a while before that. And, you know, if you ever have lived in the Cobb County or Cherokee County area or even like North Fulton, you probably know some of the restaurants that they have, you know. So my family did Mexico Lindo and then Tijuana Joe's as well, because, you know, they couldn't agree on a name, but so just did different ones. But
number one, very familiar with the restaurants. Yes. It's a banger, as my colleague Mia would say. It's a banger.
Right.
So growing up as a child of immigrants, how does that impact the work that you do today, or does it?
It definitely does. I mean, first off, growing up, and when I have over 80 relatives that live in a metro Atlanta area, definitely, you know, teaches you a lot about, you know, having to say hi to every single person who's in the room, you know. You know, I learned very early on in my childhood how to network. it's a really good sense of community. And that's one of the biggest things. I'm very blessed to have been able to have such an amazing family that has stayed together like that. Because I know that's more rare these days in a lot of ways. And, you know, we do a lot of family traditions and every year and stuff like that to always be together. And so it's been a best thing to be able to have that foundation. And I think that really informs a lot of my morality and my politics, because a lot of people in my family give back to the community through charity work, nonprofit work and stuff like that. And so they taught me from early on why it's important to always give back to your community, especially when you've been blessed yourself. You know, and so that's always been super important to me, is like, you know, we are here to help others, right? And give back to others. Even though politically, a lot of people in my family, we're all over the spectrum. So there's a lot of disagreements on how to do that. But that's certainly the core of my values, is, you know, giving back to the community as much as we can, especially when you're blessed to have things that other people don't. So.
Yeah, no, and that makes so much sense. You know, as I was doing a little research on you and your background and the work you do, you have been named a democratic socialist. That's Wikipedia's words. But what are your thoughts about being named that? Do you agree? Do you, you know, not like to be put in that kind of category? I ask because, to me, that makes sense given the story that you gave with your background and your family and giving back to community.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it's all about, right? Like, I don't care about the label, you know. I am a DSA member. I'm a democratic socialist. That's fine. But at the end of the day, what matters is, what are you going to do for people? What are the issues that you care about? And that's what we found when I was on the campaign trail, is that people want change. People are tired of the status quo, tired of a government that only works for the people at the top. And not the rest of us, an economy that only works for the major corporations and the wealthy elite and not the working class. And so people are ready for change. And so that's what they really resonated with our message in that regard. And so for me, yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say I'm not a democratic socialist. I am. But at the end of the day, what matters is, what issues are we going to put forward to actually make a change in the community?
And that's real. I mean, change is definitely what we are always looking for. But how we make change, it happens in a lot of different ways,
yeah.
Right? There are different ways to attack that.
Right.
one of the ways that we attack that, and we were talking about this before we started filming, you know, changing the media and changing the narrative and owning storytelling has always been an important way for me to try to facilitate that change. Yeah. And again, doing my research, I found out that you actually have a background in filmmaking, which blew my mind, because I would have thought it was, you know, sociology, politics, something of that nature.
That's what a lot of people think, but no.
So why did you get in filmmaking? What interested you in filmmaking?
So since I was a kid, I've always wanted to be a filmmaker. It's one of the things I was always very passionate about. So I used to make those videos on YouTube back in the day. Don't look them up, please. I've unlisted most of them, so you can't find them anyway. But I've always had a passion for storytelling. I think it's really inspiring to be emotionally impacted by a story that someone tells. And so for me, I want to do that for others as well, as a creative. And even to this day, I still, you know, write and stuff, because I still want to make sure I'm still using that creative muscle, especially during these times. But, you know, I never thought of myself as doing this, being a politician, you know, doing politics full time. That was never my intention growing up. I always wanted to be a filmmaker. I went to school for film to do that. And I worked in the film industry after graduating college. And that was my full intent. But, you know, sometimes life kind of shows you different paths and you realize, actually, maybe I need to do something else. Because what I found out in college was that I really, you know, had a passion for wanting to help people as well and making an impact in people's lives, not just through storytelling, but just in general. And, you know, I did a lot of work in local politics when I was in college. And I realized I actually really liked working in that kind of space. And so, and obviously, you know, Bernie Sanders was a big inspiration for me as well when he ran in 2016. And so I started to think more and more about like what I really want to do. And then I think what really solidified it for me was honestly working in the film industry. And I was not happy working there. This was supposed to be what I want to do my whole life. And then I was there and I just wasn't happy. And, you know, I think there's a lot of, you know, you should do what you think is best for you, right? And I realized that wasn't my calling. At least, you know, as like a career per se, you know, I think I still definitely want to do film on the side and I'm trying to continue that. But I think I realized that I really want to just go into politics and just, you know, organizing community, helping the community full time. And so I left the film industry and now here I am.
No, and that's real, because, you know, I think it is about a learning, you know, people think you go to school and that's what you do for the rest of your life, right? But as you grow and as you learn, you learn things. There was something that I'm sure interested you about the film industry, right? Like you said, that storytelling aspect. Yeah. But then to be able to take that storytelling, you know, skill and then move it over into politics, mm-hmm. which I'm sure it still becomes relevant,
definitely.
Right?
100%.
It's a useful skill to be able to have. So, I mean, that's great. And that's what we should be doing. And as a person who's also in the film industry, I agree, especially here in Atlanta, it's a bit oversaturated. It's weird pay. It's a lot of different dynamics that go into it.
Yeah. Definitely not the best working conditions.
That's the story for the other day. Look, I can tell you stories about my days in New York doing films and literally being on set for 18 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
And, again, a story for another time.
I've been on set till 5 in the morning. It's all good, you know. Anyway.
So, you know, as we are now in legislative session, but before we go into legislative session, I do want to talk about a little of the work that you've done in the past. Mm-hmm. You know, GCV is an environmentally driven organization, but we view this through a social justice lens.
Yeah.
Right? So how we affect the environment, how the environment is affected, but how it affects the different communities in that environment. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's come up recently in your work has been the Sterigenics. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So start from the beginning and tell us, like, what is Sterigenics? What was it? What was the problem? And what work have you contributed?
Yeah. So Sterigenics is a facility in Cobb County, right next to the border of Cobb County and Fulton, in a Vinings area that does work around sterilizing medical equipment. But a few years ago, and before the pandemic, it was discovered that that facility was releasing very toxic levels of ethylene oxide into the atmosphere, into the local neighborhoods, which is a carcinogenic substance. And it was impacting the health of people in our community. In fact, there's currently, I believe, a lawsuit in process around that facility. And so back when it happened, there was a lot of movement to close down the facility and do what we can to stop this clearly this toxic pollutant that was in our community. So they closed down temporarily, but what ended up happening is they eventually reopened once they fixed the issue. And while there has been lower ethylene oxide released than it was before, it is still being released, right? And so it needs to be shut down permanently, and that's the work that I'm going to be doing to work on that. You know, I'm working with a lot of people on the local level to make that happen as well, because that's more of a county issue. And so I know there's some people who are interested in that as well. I know that a lot of elected officials who were there at the time, including like former state representative Eric Allen, has been working on that. And so, you know, there's a lot of work to be done in that regard. And, you know, I think it's just ridiculous that we have these factories that are knowing that they're releasing these chemicals, because something that we found out as well is that they've actually had a different facility in another state. I can't remember the state in the Midwest that was doing the same thing. And they closed down that facility several years ago because it was doing the same thing. So why is this one still running? So it's the same company.
It's eerie how closely this parallels to the most recent disaster over in Conyers with the biolab, right?
Exactly.
We just had if you haven't checked out the biolab episode, we did one last week. Go back and look at that. But it's similar, like parallels, right? So, you know, biolab had a facility in Louisiana that had like horrible effects. And once again, still not only once, I don't even think it's twice. I think three times in Georgia I've had similar experiences.
Yeah.
And for these corporations to still be operating, you know, this is where people like you are important.
Mm-hmm.
This is stuff that is, I think, intentionally taken out of the media or minimized in the media. And people are not really fully aware of the implications. Because I'm not as knowledgeable about Sterigenics as I, you know, should be doing this work. Mm. And that's just a testament to how minimized things can get.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm really glad that you all are working on this and these environmental protections, because that is where our work, you know, connects. That is that. Environmental justice.
Right. And that's one of the things as well with me, that with a connecting issue with what I'm talking about in regards to our government being run by the major corporations and the wealthy elite, right? It's like the reason those kind of places don't get shut down is because a lot of people in our government are bought and paid for by those same corporations who are poisoning our communities. And so, you know, we have to be able to reject that corporate money and reject that influence from them and recognize that we're here to represent the people, not the for-profit businesses.
That's real and extremely relevant in these current times.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about a little bit of your other work. I know you've been instrumental in the transit referendum. Can you tell us what happened with that? I think another thing that has been kind of minimized in the media, but like talk to us about like how you started working with the transit, what the goal of it was, and then where it is today.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I was definitely doing what I could from my campaign side of things to help with the transit referendum. And I know there's a whole coalition working on it. And I really, you know, want to thank all the people who worked on it because they're doing their best with what they had. But unfortunately, we were outraised by a significant amount by the people who were against public transit in Cobb County. And I just feel like there wasn't enough. It's a very, very strong minority of people who tend to be the older, white, wealthy people of Cobb County, who are against doing things that are good for the community because it's bad for their pocketbooks, right? And so, you know, they're very well organized. They had a lot of money behind them, and we just weren't prepared to combat that, I think. And so, you know, this is the first public transit referendum in Cobb County that's happened in a while. And so I think it was, we learned a lot from that, I think. And there's a lot of work to be done. to be frank, because I think one of the biggest things we see is the enthusiasm gap. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of enthusiasm against public transit, right? There's a lot of energy behind that. There's not as much, while the majority of people, when you ask them, do they support public transit, they say yes, there's not a lot of enthusiasm behind that support. So that's why they end up winning, because they have way more enthusiasm, more energy, and they can be able to convince a ton of people that it's bad for you. I mean, one of the mailers they sent against the transit referendum was that they're going to raise your taxes by 17%, which is obviously not true, but because there's a 1% sales tax. But the thing is, what they did is, since it's increasing from 6% to 7%, they just did the math on how much of an increase that is, right? And so it's those kind of tactics that they use, which, to be frank, is honestly very smart. But we have to be able to combat that, like the propaganda that they're showing, because we need public transit in Cobb County. There are so many working class people, there are so many elderly folks, there are so many people in general who would benefit from public transit. I mean, even if you're just a regular person in Cobb County, if you want to go to the Battery and not have to pay for a ton of money for parking or have to walk 3 blocks just to get to the game, public transit is a perfect solution for that. But we don't have it because a bunch of racist rich people in Cobb County don't want it.
And that's real. I find it so interesting. I've been in Atlanta for about 10 years now. And every other city that I've lived in, I've lived in major metropolitan cities. So we're talking like the New Yorks, California's metro system isn't that great either, but I find it strange that like places like Chicago and New York function so efficiently mm-hmm. with this mass transit. And you would think that Atlanta would benefit. I mean, with traffic, with the amount of parking, right. Not only that it's limited, but the cost of parking.
Yeah.
You would think people would be for this.
Yeah.
And I'm always curious and interested in why people are not. And the way you broke it down makes sense, right? There are people that are forward, but just not as enthusiastic as the people that are against it. I also think it's important to mention that, you know, we here in Georgia, we love our cars, right? We love our gas-guzzling vehicles.
Yeah,
it is a part of the culture.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's like, well, you know, I paid for this car. Why would I want to have this Metro Transit? But honestly, other cities, there is no other option, and it works so efficiently.
It does, and it's also better for the sustainable economy as well, because what you see with suburban sprawl is that just look at all the malls. They're all falling apart. They're all decaying. They're all going to get closed down within the next few years. Why? Because we have suburban sprawl that makes it so that it's not convenient for people to go. And there's other factors too, obviously, but like, you know, it's not a sustainable economic model to have all this like huge spread out communities everywhere, because then people just aren't going to go to these shops all the time. And eventually it's just going to, you know, when you have that foot traffic, when you have all that, when everything is denser and closer together, there's more incentive and more ability to be able to just frequent the same shops and grow the economy in that area and give back and a good return on investment for the stuff that you're building there. But unfortunately, people don't see the long-term impacts of that. So it's hard to show people that without actually, you know, having any model, really.
Do you think we'll see another opportunity to push for expanding MARTA or mass transit?
I certainly hope so. And I think there is an opportunity. You know, it's just, we're going to have to really change the way we do it, or like really just put a lot more push behind it. Because I think what we did this past year wasn't enough. And we need to do much more if we're going to be able to pass these kind of initiatives. I mean, even the one in Gwinnett County failed, which honestly was like a bit of a shock to me. But, you know, it's just, there's a lot of work to be done. And one of the things I'm considering as well is like, and this, it will be harder to do right now with the Republican majority, but hopefully when we get to a different majority, maybe looking at it from a state level instead of county by county.
I like that. And I like that you're thinking about different ways to attack this.
Mm-hmm.
So apart from Sterogenics and transit, you also are working with the Stop Cop City
mm-hmm.
movement, right? Yeah. This has become more and more public with every passing week. Right. So, you know, from a GCV standpoint, because we are about protecting the environment, we're looking at Stop Cop City from, again, a different angle
yeah.
than maybe many people are looking through it. Right. Our main concern is that this is 180 acres of natural Georgia resources, forest, that is being utilized without people having the opportunity to at least vote on it.
Yeah.
So talk to folks about like the problems with Cop City. What's happening with why do you think people aren't being allowed to vote on this? This is our taxpayer dollars.
Well, because it's a corporate-funded project that the major corporations that influence Atlanta and the state of Georgia really want. And so when a corporation wants something, most of our politicians just bow to them and say, yes, sir, what do you want? Instead of actually representing the people. And so that's what happens with this kind of things. So, you know, it's an unholy alliance between the mayor of Atlanta and the governor of Georgia doing what they always love to do, which is to put the boot on working people and use our taxpayer dollars for something that's going to benefit private corporations more than anyone else, right? Because that's what this facility is for. It's not for training. If it was for training, they wouldn't need an entire, by far the biggest training facility in the entire country, even though APD is not even one of the top 10 biggest police forces. And making it this playing ground to, you know, bombs testing, gun testing and stuff like that, or shooting ranges, excuse me, and things like that. It's like, you don't need all that if you're training them on how to de-escalate. That's not how that works, right? They're training them to have essentially violent warfare against our people. And it's, like you said, it's destroying the environment. And, you know, there's still concerns that around how the environmental impact, not just of cutting down the trees, but also how it's going to impact, say, the water systems in local areas around the facility. And so, you know, it's just all around a terrible project. And again, you know, regardless of your opinion on the facility, the fact that they did it behind closed doors, they tried to do it without anyone noticing, and they got caught red-handed doing that. And then they refused to take a ballot referendum where over 116,000 people signed, when you only need 60,000 to actually do a referendum, and held it up in the courts so that they didn't have to vote on it, and then they just build a facility anyway. You know, I mean, it's hard to say how they can claim they're the party of democracy when they do stuff like that.
Because we are in the heart of legislative session, can you talk to us about any current legislation? Can you give us the tea of what's going on in the ground under the Gold Dome? What current legislation are you working on or looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm working on, I just dropped my first bill, $20 minimum wage across the board.
Nice.
Because we need a living wage in Georgia. Yes. And I don't know if you know this, but the state minimum wage in Georgia is actually $5 an hour. The only reason it's seven in Georgia is because the federal minimum wage supersedes the state minimum wage. So if it weren't for the federal, it'd be $5 in Georgia. It's insane. And so $20 is the bare minimum people need to live. And so we're doing that. And we're also getting rid of the sub minimum wage so that disabled people get paid the same as everyone else. Same thing with the tip minimum wage, and same thing with prison laborers as well. Cause, a lot of people in prisons are paid, almost either nothing or like 5 cents a day. And so, you know, everyone deserves a living wage, regardless of who you are, where you work. Every single person deserves a living wage of $20 an hour, and that's what the bill does. And it should have a bill number next week. And so, looking forward to that. We're working on some other legislation around immigration, obviously, with everything that's going on right now, to see what we can do to at least reduce the harm, mitigate some of the worst things that are happening in our communities at the moment. And then number one thing for me is housing. So we're going to be introducing legislation to curtail and extremely significantly limit the amount of housing that corporate landlords can own in Georgia, because it's insane how much corporations are coming in and buying up all these properties. And making it unattainable for the rest of us to be able to get a home. You know, only three companies own over 19,000 homes in Metro Atlanta. And so a lot of people talk about there's not enough housing. Yeah, it's because they're buying it all up. And so we need to stop that. And that's what I'm going to be introducing. So,
well, it sounds like we have a lot to look forward to this legislative session.
Yeah.
And a lot to, I guess, act on. So talk to us really quickly about how your constituents can reach you. What issues can they come to you with, and what's the best way to go about doing that?
Yeah, no, you can. So, you know, I always am posting on social media. So follow me at Sanchez4Georgia, the number 4, Sanchez4Georgia. TikTok, Instagram, all of that. But you can also, you know, obviously if you want to contact me directly, you can email me gabriel.sanchez@house.ga.gov. It's on the legislative website. And if you want to email me there, you can email me on my campaign account, info@sanchezforgeorgia, and that's four spelled out, F-O-R, info@sanchezforgeorgia.com. That's on my website. My website has a contact form. You can also sign up for my newsletter to stay updated on what we're doing. We do a bi-weekly newsletter every 2 weeks. And I do updates on legislative session all the time on TikTok and Instagram. Any issue you have, any concerns you have, please let us know. Even if it's not necessarily like voting on something, if you have an issue that you need help with that has to do with dealing with a government agency in the state of Georgia, please let us know as well, because we can connect you with the right resources. You know, some of the things we're doing right now is like trying to connect people with lawyers right now for some of the immigration stuff that's happening, for example. So that's some of the things that you can do. Please, we're completely open to any help or resources you need, or any questions or concerns you have. Please do not hesitate to contact our office. We have a whole team ready to make sure that we get you situated. There might be a little bit of delay in responding just because we have a lot of emails to go through. But just know that we will respond to you and get whatever issue that needs to be fixed. So.
Well, thank you so much, Representative Sanchez. We really appreciate your work. And for those listening, if you do want to know more about any of the work that Representative Sanchez or any other elected official is doing, you can visit us at gcvoters.org or follow us on social media at gcvoters. Until next time.
Thanks, y'all.